Money and markets. Number one story of the week, the gun control beatdown is on. We see a squabble back and forth between Alex Jones and a variety of the internet media with CNN Piers Morgan. A petition got started on the White House website to throw Piers Morgan or pull his, he's a British citizen, pull his right to be in the country. Alex Jones was one of the people promoting it. And sure enough, Alex Jones got an invite to be on CNN. And apparently, I didn't watch it, got thrown off the show. I watched a little bit. He was quite bombastic. Alex has never been trained to perform in that environment, which really, one of the things you're trained for national network TV is it's more important to appear coherent and calm than what particularly you say. Alex was followed up by Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America head, who did a very good job. We'll put that video up on the blog. But the clear effort on the part of the major media is to make people who support gun ownership look like they're nuts or crazy or not, sort of not with it. But the beatdown is on. We saw two mysterious deaths of very popular supporters of gun ownership. One was the guy named Ratliff, who ran a very popular YouTube channel. Another, Noveski, who made guns and posted an article about the connection between school shootings and psychiatric medicine on the website. Very suspicious question of what happened to those two gentlemen. We see Vice President Biden leading the campaign with looking to bring forward recommendations for the president's task force. He announced yesterday that they didn't really need legislation. They could do this by executive order, which I question seriously. Meeting then with faith leaders, he's clearly building support for this. And today the announcement was he met with the NRA, who's been strangely silent. And I suspect the reason why is that the NRA has been waiting to see the specifics of what would be proposed before they really came in out and hit hard. Another story, CalSTRS announcing that it's pulling investment from gun companies. The story is up on the blog. It makes you really wonder, since they financed the entire housing bubble, where is this really going? This CalSTRS is deciding to vote with their money. As I said before, NRA has been strangely quiet until today when Biden showed their hands. And I suspect the NRA knows that this is a very dangerous kind of situation. Wouldn't surprise me if the pressure on them is quite extraordinary. Now, what does this all have to do with the fiscal cliff? Because it has a lot. We have a new study from Heritage that I will post on the blog tomorrow. Let me just read a quote from the abstract. From 1988 and to 2001, the amount of the U.S. population that receives assistance from the federal government grew by 62%. That means that more than 41% of the U.S. population is enrolled in at least one federal assistance program. To make matters worse, per capita expenditures on recipients are rising as well. In 2010, over 70% of all federal spending went to dependent creating programs. It goes on. As Congress meets and argues about who's going to get cut, is it going to be the creditors? Is it going to be the military? Or is it going to be domestic spending and all the people who are getting a check? I think it's a real prediction of where things are going, that there's a real push to get gun control. And that push is not about people shooting people. It's the real fear that the government can't enforce spending cuts and tax increases without getting gun control. So it's not a good sign, but very directly connected to the fiscal cliff. Second story in the news is the cabinet turnover. We see Chuck Hagel announced finally as senator, former senator from Nebraska, going in as Secretary of Defense. Hagel has a very interesting background. He's got military experience as a senator and in government, in business, academia, and investment, a lot of financial experience. And if you look at his resume, he's almost uniquely qualified to sort of sit at the nexus of the central banking warfare machinery. Then we still don't have announced John Kerry for state, but that's expected. And then John Brennan, someone with tremendous years at the CIA, lots of experience in covert operations, big proponent of drones, with quite a nasty reputation going in as head of the CIA. Jack Lew, the president's chief of staff, a very political choice going in and announced as Secretary of the Treasury. This is a very unusual pick and almost, I would say, an ominous pick. The Secretary of the Treasury was always somebody who had respect on the global stage. Traditionally was somebody who'd been very successful in business and finance. Geithner, leaving as Secretary of Treasury, was the first person chose who didn't fit that background. Rather, they were from a staff background, very much sort of the staff guy who worked for the players, but never a player himself. Jack Lew is the sort of second staff kind of person, and he's someone who can manage the machinery in a very politicized operation, not a lot of financial background. In combination with Brennan, you get the feeling of people, both Brennan and Lew, people who know how to manage the machine in a dirty world. And it almost communicates that the president and the people running the government don't have any taste for another Paul O'Neill problem. Paul O'Neill was the Secretary of Treasury who went in for Secretary of Treasury under the second Bush, former head of Alcoa, very respected and capable person with experience at OMB and in government in past administrations, but basically was a straight shooter and clean, wouldn't run it dirty and had to go. And so instead of getting a Paul O'Neill and somebody who would have to learn the agenda, they want people who can continue to implement the current agenda without an interruption and manage, as I said before, manage the machine in a dirty world. So in one sense, it's very ominous choices, but it means the machinery will dance to the political tunes. A lot of talk now coming out of the fiscal cliff negotiations that the debt limit is very close. One report that we hit it on December 31st, $16.4 trillion, and that the Treasury is already operating on emergency measures. But it's clear that we're gonna hit that limit somewhere between February 15th and March 15th when the corporate taxes are due. The new Congress coming in has got a lot less political reason to negotiate compromise between Democrats and Republicans than the last one. So we have every reason to expect a sort of very partisan squabble over both spending cuts and the debt limit. So as I said before in the wrap-up, beware the Ides of March. This could get quite ugly. We have a new academic study on Social Security saying that we're going to run out of money much faster than has been predicted. That's up on the blog. And if you look at the science of actuarial studies in government, it's there's tremendous latitude both in how you cook the books or what could really happen. So could it be possible? The answer is yes. New heavy push for flu vaccines with the flu season upon us. I just want to caution you, beware, beware, beware. We have Alan Phillips scheduled to come on later this month. He's the attorney who's done marvelous work on determining how to assert exemptions for vaccines. I'm always reminded of the story I was at the grocery about 6 years ago when one flu vacciner was being pushed. And there was a guy helping, working at the store, helping everybody to their car with their groceries. He must have been in his mid to late 70s. You know, he was trying to pick up some extra money. And he said to me, "Are you going to take the flu vaccine?" And I said, "No, I never take them." And he said, "I never take them either." He said, "My parents taught me." He said, "Do you know about the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918? And I said, "Yes, of course, because my grandmother, my father's mother, in fact, died during the Spanish flu epidemic." And he said, "You know, the only people who died were the ones who took the vaccine." And that's what I call old-timey knowledge, but you'll hear that from a lot of old-timers, and he and I are of the same mind when it comes to vaccines. Final story, and I'm going to talk a lot more about it with Franklin, is the beginning of the reinflation. We saw a whole series of stories this week about banks settling with literally in the billions. And these deals are complicated. They run between the U.S. government and the Department of Justice, Fannie, Freddie's involved. We have other deals going down between AIG and the Department of Justice, AIG agreeing not to sue, join the shareholder suits against the government. But what all of these are about at the end of the day in the background is clearing out the criminal liabilities that resulted from the mortgage bubble. So let me just go back and recap history. Strong dollar policy. We bubble the economy with huge amounts of fraudulent mortgage and other fraudulent debt paper, suck huge capital offshore. The capital sitting offshore. Now, how do you bring it back in and reinflate the real estate and the economy after the banks and the private parties have gotten a hold of it for very, very cheap? Well, before you can do that, you've got to clear the criminal liabilities. As I said about QE3, with the Fed buying all that paper, they're running a shredding operation over there. And these subsequent deals and the bank settlements put us in the position where they can reinflate. But reinflate, remember, with a whole series of very concentrated positions in real estate and land. And now when you reinflate, it's going to make some people very, very wealthy. So what we're watching is the sort of the cleaning up after the bailouts that makes it possible to proceed with the next phase. And I think that's very important when we talk about what's ahead for the markets, including the precious metals market.